The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast for people who love and miss comics' greatest team, the Doom Patrol.
Yes, this is a place for you. I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter, at AvantGarve. You can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFDPod.
And I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter, at Reading_Hicks, and you can email us, that's waitingfordoom@gmail.com, on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. This week, after two episodes of fabulous guest stars, it's back to just you and me, Mike, the two amigos, the OG WFD team, Hombres El Doom.
Wow. How very multilingual of you.
Yeah, I can speak Dork in several languages.
Yes, it's good to be back. Just the two Doom bros back in the chairs. A big hello also to our friends in the Inner Circle Comics group of podcasts. Lots of good stuff out there from those guys.
I've actually listened to all of their samplings in the last few. Well, some of them, I didn't read it. I have been a long time listener, didn't read it.
Yes.
There are a bunch of blokes who in America who, well, some of them are up in, where is it?
Portland.
Portland, and Ben is in LA, I think, or Anaheim, around there.
Close enough.
Disneyland. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so they don't read stuff, and they tell you what they're not reading, and then they talk about the things they're trying to read, and then they do a lot of talking about not reading DC, basically. Mm,
yeah. No bias there at all.
Yeah. It's Therapy. That's Andrea and Aaron. I've listened to them for ages. They're very intellectual, and they don't really review comics. They talk about the themes and the things that are raised by the themes in comics.
Yes, as I say, no reviews, just analysis.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy. Panel Culture is a new one to me. That's the Canadian guys. I really like that one. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do interesting news and reviews and things. But, you know, they're kind of nice. They're like nice blokes. Fun Timey Comics.
Bit of a typo there in the script.
Sorry, isn't that not Fun Timey Comics?
No, I believe they're called Fun Time Comics. Yeah,
I don't know much about this one. What's the deal?
It's a guy from Australia and a girl from Texas, actually, and they get together once a week and they talk about comics that they think are fun.
Oh, Fun Time Comics.
Fun Time, not Fun Timey Comics. Yeah.
Oh, like Fun Timey Comics.
Like I said, typo.
It's almost like it's deliberate. Yes, that is Mike's other podcast.
Yes.
So if you can't get enough, Mike, that's the place to go.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I do like the Bummer of the Week segment.
Well, we have to get the Bummer of the Week out of the way before we can get to the fun stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Logic.
And then there's the Hangout, which is Allison, Jess, and Karen.
Yep.
Yeah. Three comic girl fans who... Is that damn patronising? I'm sorry. Anyway, they are females who are really into comics, and they get a lot of really good people on their show.
Mm.
And they've been going a lot longer than us, haven't they?
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lastly, there's Two-Headed Nerd, which, you know, if we're the sort of podcast where, you know, we're drinking cups of tea while we record, they are on energy drinks, these blokes. They are full on. And they're out of Omaha, and they do a lot of shouting.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, and they've got lots of... they go really hard with the music in between things. It's sort of the opposite of us.
A little bit. Yeah, just a bit.
So...
good bunch of shows there, yeah.
They're all good, yeah.
Mm.
So, Mr. Garvey, Mr. Two Podcast Garvey, how was your week in comics?
It was all right. It seemed to be a week of... finales, so to speak. We had Convergence wrap up, so
Excited about that? It's a good wrap up.
It was okay.
Yeah.
There's multiverses now, and heroes.
So the end game is DC can do whatever stories they want after this, and nothing matters. Is that your take on it?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good outcome.
Keep churning stuff out, I guess. Good for them. But in terms, in comparison to other DC events of years gone by, I don't think it's as earth-shattering or as well done as things in the past. Certainly better than the last few Marvel events. Sorry, Marvel fans. Curb Stomp, that also finished up. That's like a 1970s girl gang sort of defending their turf and getting in a street fights and that. That wrapped up. That was a good
one. Another one of those.
Another one, yeah.
So common.
And the latest Flash Gordon miniseries, that wrapped up as well. So, a bit down about that. But I'm hoping that the cryptic clues they gave before it started will prove true in that some sort of new King's Watch type series will come out once all these King Dynamite miniseries finish off. So...
Well, I was listening to your Prince Valiant review on Funtime Comics, and Flash Gordon actually showed up there, and Mandrake.
He did. It was awesome.
That sounds rad.
It was like a completely unexpected mini crossover in one issue. It was so cool. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, how was your week, Paul?
Oh, nothing very exciting. I read a Astro City hardcover, which is probably not my favorite Astro City hardcover.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, that was.
You're a big fan of that.
I am. I've got a lot of Astro City. In fact, everything up to date and in collections. And, yeah, the last one left me a little cold. I mean, there's a couple of good stories in it, but as a overall collection, it was a bit on the weak side. But I don't like to knock things, generally.
Yeah.
But I've been reading a bit of Secret Avengers, the Alish Kott run.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that from the library, so I've been reading the first few stories in that, and that's lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some good team-ups and crazy... I mean, I like... it's got MODOK on the team, which I think is nuts, and that's cool. Everyone loves MODOK.
Does it get very... Because I've not read that series, so I have to ask, does it get very sort of deep and meaningful and weird and go off on bizarre tangents like other Alish Kott stuff does?
Not so far. It seems like this... It's got an irreverence, which is like the Hawkeye Fraction series.
Okay.
Yeah, where everyone's a smartass to each other and things like that. I quite like it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a mouse with a giant syringe on it that's a key plot point in one of the stories, which is one of MODOK's little experiments. So if that sounds intriguing, this could be a book for you.
Right. Good to know.
What's that ticking? Bummer of the week.
No, it's... Oh, wrong show, Paul.
Sorry.
It's the Doom Clock. So this week on the Doom Clock, we look at the numbers and we see that the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5. Otherwise known as the Giffen Clark era, which was cover dated July 2011, but actually went on sale on May 4th of that year, which means we've been without an actual Doom Patrol book for 4 years and 4 weeks.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It is. That's the bummer of our week, yes. Yeah. However, on the other hand, the last appearance of the Doom Patrol was 1 week ago.
Shut the front door.
I shall not. I shall not shut the front door.
Shut the full cup.
We saw the patrol, or most of them, in a panel in the 8-page sneak peek for Justice League United, which came out last week, which gave us a look at the post-convergence JLU as they're travelling far and wide to add members to their roster. So starting with issue 11 of that series, Jeff Parker will be writing and Travel Foreman will be doing the art. And the panel in question showed Elastigirl and, I'm guessing it's Element Woman, because we saw her in Justice League. They're battling a mob of some sort in the background, while Robot Man's talking to the reader saying, in response to joining the JLU, he says, I can do a mission, but I have my own team, you know.
And it's got a caption for him that says, "Robot Man, man who is a robot."
Yes.
Yeah.
Big thanks again to Jess Camacho, honorary patroller, who alerted us to the existence of this very panel.
Patrol it.
Yes, I kind of lost my mind a little bit when I saw that.
How did you react to it? Yeah, I saw the tweet from Jess and it was like, grab the iPad, download quick. And it was very exciting. Yes. And it made me a little late for work, I must admit.
Same here.
I skimmed the issue until I saw the panel in question and it was like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
So Jess Parker and Travel Foreman on art, you know, we're not worthy.
Yes. I think anyone who's interested, I think what will hopefully happen is that people who are interested in Doom Patrol might go out and buy this issue so that the powers at DC will say, we had a really good spike in sales. And
yeah, I must admit, I mean, I don't own the Justice League United books. I've read the first one and thought it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. But when I heard Jeff Park was coming on, it really did pique my interest because I've liked what he's done on Aquaman.
Mm.
And he's just one of those great, I think he's a really good DC fit. Like yes. He's got that sort of, he's not flashy. He digs in deep with the characters. He uses characters really well. And obviously looking at this preview, I mean, this is on Comixology for nothing, and it's on DC site for nothing. He's basically said, I want to use all the characters I can get hold of. So in this book, the team are running around recruiting characters for some universal crisis. And you've got characters like Zatanna, Beast Boy, Swamp Thing, The Demon, Ray Palmer, Kid Flash. And then villains like Brainiac and Gorilla Grodd and Lex Luthor and Vandal Savage, Mera, Deadman, Blue Beetle, Firestorm. You know, it's just awesome. Like, he's basically said, I want all these characters. And they've gone, well, okay. And the end splash page has more characters like the Phantom Stranger and Orion and Katana, Vixen, Bizarro, Booster Gold, Deathstroke. Yeah, it's...
It's kind of like a DC fanboy's, I don't know, super team up, basically.
Yeah, Blue Devil's there, and it's like, I want all the toys in the toy box. Yeah. I can see Captain Carrick, I can see Constantine. Yeah.
Yes. So hopefully, this one panel will lead to more appearances of the Patrol.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. But of course, we'll move on with the Doom Clock, and we'll look at a bit of Doom Patrol history.
Oh, yes.
And released this week in 2002 with a cover date of August 2002 was issue number 9 of Volume 3, also known as the Arcudi Huat Era. It cost a mere $2.50 US, and the cover showed Paul Cliff bellowing to the heavens asking, "Who am I?" And the story within was titled My Dreams Have Lied, and it detailed what happened to Cliff and the previous incarnation of the Patrol prior to the start of the Arcudi run.
And good issue, that one.
And spoiler warning, what happened was not good.
Not for all the characters.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Anyway, so yes, once again, big hopes on the shoulders of Jeff Parker for the return of Doom Patrol.
But at least he's going to tide us over with a bit of Robot Man until we get our Doom Patrol book back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a way to bring them back, you know?
Yeah.
What a way. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're taking ourselves back to before we were born, when the very first run of the Doom Patrol was in full and groovy swinging publication. We'll be picking up where we left off with issues 94, and then we'll do issue 95.
But we'll also be shining a long overdue spotlight on the writer and original co-creator of the Doom Patrol, Mr. Arnold Drake, through the compelling Doom facts that were sent in by our good friend from the audio audience, Reggie. And he writes, I've just finished your Teen Titans episode of the Waiting for Doom podcast, and I wanted to let you know how much I appreciate your podcast stylings. I especially enjoy how you approach comics in general with a fair bit of sarcasm and skepticism while maintaining a general air of glee about them.
That's us.
I think this is close to the way I feel about comics in general. A good time, full of fun and crazy situations, and shocking or meaningful character moments, but let's not kid ourselves and imbue them with a literary class they have not achieved. They are, or were by some accounts, pulp magazines. As you're aware, I've been a fan of the podcast since episode one, despite not being completely up to date, and I don't think you can go much longer without paying some kind of homage to the creators of the Doom Patrol, Arnold Drake and Bob Haney. There are many talking points about Arnold Drake, and since I endeavoured to write a book about him, I know a fair bit. Here's just a few bits of information about Drake I uncovered that I think would make for a worthwhile discussion.
Okay, so here we go with our very first Reggie Doom fact. Arnold Drake realised he wanted to be a writer when he was laid up with scarlet fever as a young boy and asked his mom for a bridge pad of paper and a pencil. He drew a comic strip about a cruise ship mutiny, but as it progressed, he realised the pictures were getting smaller and smaller while the words filled the panels more and more. He figured then he was probably more of a writer than an artist.
Good call, Arnold. Good call.
Yeah.
So let's kick off with our first issue for this episode. Doom Patrol number 94.
94.
With the cover date of March 1965, but I believe it came out in January?
Yep.
Of 65.
Yep. Mike's Amazing World of Comics has the exact dates.
Yes. Awesome site, that.
Mm.
Not my, it's not my Amazing Comics.
No, not Mike Garvey's Amazing World of Comics.
No, that'll be very small. But no. Yeah. Yeah, for the princely sum of 12 US cents. Oh, jeez. That's what it is. The creative team, we had Bob Brown doing the cover art, Arnold Drake writing, of course.
Is Bob Brown the Australian politician? Is that one?
I'd be very surprised if it was.
Okay.
Very surprised.
There's more than one Bob Brown? That's weird.
Possibly. There's more than one Mike Garvey.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's more than one Paul Hicks. There's a country singer.
Yeah. I think there's a NASCAR driver called Mike Garvey and I think a baseball player.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
We should hire hitmen and bump them off. Or we could do each other's. That way there wouldn't be any suspicion.
It's getting too weird now. Bruno Premiani did the interior art and Murray Boltonoff was the editor of this issue. And on the cover we see poor old Cliff Steele on a contraption that's kind of making him look like flattened Swiss cheese.
This is a really iconic cover. I'd never read the original Doom Patrol until recently, and this was a cover that I knew just from being around the traps of DC Comics and, you know, websites and things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's classic.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
And as we get into it, we see that the Patrol are actually guests on a TV program called Open Mind, and they're...
That happen? How would that... Would someone call up and go, we'd like you to be on our talk show, and the chief goes, yes, all of us on the talk show.
Well... They're obviously now famous for all their exploits and people know that they deal with weird stuff. So the other guests on this TV show are Dr. John Raddick, who is the author of a book called Illusion and Reality, and an Eastern mystic called Ramakara. And they're proving that there are supernatural beings at work in the world, specifically a person called Ozra.
He thinks it's a load of punk.
Basically, yeah, the patrol are there to disprove it all, and they're basically, yeah, throwing down the gauntlet saying, yeah, you're full of it. We don't believe you at all.
Pretty soon, Ozra is running around destroying things, and the Doom Patrol, you know, trying to work out what's happening, and he's flying in a cart in the sky and destroying buildings and stuff. And the chief is having a real existential crisis. Is this, you know, spiritual powers real? Or, you know, he's a man of science. He doesn't believe in this. And, you know, what if it's true? And Cliff is out of action. And then Cliff gets into the action and he's like, okay, maybe it's mind control, like in the Dr. Janus issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Back in issue number 81.
81, early Doom Patrol.
Yes, we discussed that issue back in episode 5 of our show, in January. Wow. Where's the time go, Paul?
I don't know. Yeah. But it turns out it is all a trick again. And it's actually not the mystic who's the evil doer in this case. It's the other guy, the skeptic. Dr. Raddick is actually the son of Dr. Janus.
Spoiler warning for a comic book 50 years old.
And Dr. Janus died in prison, so he probably got shanked or something.
Probably. Prison's pretty tough.
Yeah. The trick in this one is it comes down, there's a map of Cliff's gut, so he's in a body and everything, and his circuits.
Oh, yeah, the schematic diagram.
Yeah, and I thought that was really cool.
This is the sort of stuff I loved as a kid, where you would see the cutaway images of stuff, like ships and planes and that, and you see all the internal workings. And you get to see that on Cliff. It was so cool.
And it all comes down to the radio transmitter in his left thigh. The chief cranks it and it blocks the radio waves that are affecting everyone's brain, so they can see that Ozra is not there. Yeah.
Yes, because they think they see a giant harvest combiner come to life and possessed by Ozra, and Cliff sort of says to them, no, it's just a plain old farm combine with some flashing coloured lights around it. You're all nuts.
Yeah, and that's when Cliff gets put in the machine that perforates his legs and rolls him flat, but Rita busts him out in time, and then he flops his legs out and knocks over Dr. Raddick, and that's how they catch him.
That's right.
But I did like, on the second page, there's a great shot of after the TV show, they're all in their nightgowns
having a nightcap,
and they're all toasting each other and having a laugh about it.
It was a bit of a wacky issue, this one.
It was.
Well, sorry, this is the first story in this issue.
Yes.
Yes. But yeah, it was a bit wacky, a bit wild.
Yeah, I'd say so. Mm. All right, shall we go for another Doom Fact from Reggie?
Let's do it.
Okay. Murray Boltonoff, the editor, charged Drake with creating the Doom Patrol over a weekend in what was probably late 1962. He holed up in a hotel room with friend and Metamorpho creator and user of groovy and hep slang, Bob Haney. Zany Haney. By Monday morning, the team was assembled and pitched to Boltonoff.
Yeah.
And the rest was history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's get into the backup story, which is called The Chief Stands Alone. Ironic title, considering he's in a wheelchair.
Ah.
I see what they're doing.
Yep.
Yes, so this starts with the active members of the Doom Patrol are going into a volcano in like a volcano bathysphere. Bathysphere?
That'll do.
Paramecium? No.
Although the Chief calls it the Jet Sphere.
The Jet Sphere.
Because, yeah, big words. Don't go well for all of us.
Yeah, and they're, you know, it's super hot in there, and Larry pops out in the Negative Man form, and he has trouble with his sort of radio signals getting blocked, and then Cliff tries to do stuff, and that goes wrong, and then, they all get out of it. That's the short bit.
That was weird. It was like the weirdest intro. It was like, let's just get them to go somewhere exotic and wild and different, have a bit of trouble with the mission, and then come back to an empty headquarters.
And they're looking for the Chief. And then it does like a flashback. What's the Chief been up to? He's waiting for them to go. As soon as they're out, he turns off the big TV, the giant monitor, and he's got a secret compartment wall which he can open by whistling B-flat. Practical. And what's in there? His brand new wheelchair, which is called the Action Chair.
Mm.
It's got concealed machine guns in the armrests.
Yep.
A flamethrower in the other armrest.
A giant steel claw that pops out of the back.
Yes. And he gets this ready just in time for the debut of a new criminal who uses giant hawks to rob armoured cars. They drop gas on people.
Of course. Giant hawks, dropping gas on bank security guards. Yeah, foolproof.
And these hawks are called Tonka and Mina.
And the villain is called The Claw.
The Claw.
Yeah. I am fairly certain this is the only appearance ever of The Claw.
Man, if I was writing DC Comics, I'd bring The Claw back in a heartbeat.
Well, the weird thing is, when you look at The Claw, he does remind me of the Talons from The Court of Owls.
Yeah, maybe he's a prototypical Court of Owl dude.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Wow.
Yeah. So operating out of his Red Cross van, he sends out his hawks and they rob things. And he basically challenges the Chief to meet him in a stadium using a riddle. Ooh. And the chief has to fight him. And lucky he's got the action chair. If you want to see a man using a flamethrower on a hawk, this is the comic for you.
Or if you want to see a giant metal claw come out the back of a souped up wheelchair and grab one of these giant hawks, this is also the issue for you.
Yeah, but it all comes down to the chief. He gets hit in the head with a baseball by the claw. Hawks and baseballs, that's his weapons of choice. And the chief plays possum, and the claw comes close enough, he punches him in the face.
With a mighty thwack, yes. Although that wheelchair must move really fast, because there's one scene where the claw is coming straight towards the chief, and the chief swerves just in time, and the claw misses him completely.
Yeah.
What a souped-up chair he's got. What I also found weird was that Robot Man, Neg Man, and Elastigirl, they actually do turn up to this baseball field and see them fighting, but they don't do anything to help.
Well, they want to see what the chief's got.
They've missed all the stuff the action chair can do by this stage.
Yeah. They're there in time for the punch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, fun issue.
Yeah, it's one of those weird but fun issues from the 60s.
And we never saw Dr. Raddick again, I'm guessing.
No, he probably suffered the same fate as his father.
He went to jail and got shanked like his dad.
Before we move on to the next issue, I think it's time for another of Reggie's Arnold Drake Doom Facts.
Doom Facts.
So Reggie's told us that Arnold Drake wrote what is arguably the first ever graphic novel titled It Rhymes With Lust with fellow NYU alumnus Leslie Waller. He called it a picture novel and thought it would become a new form of literature. It was drawn by African-American artist Matt Baker, most famous for drawing the Phantom Lady.
Phantom Lady. Phantom Lady. Sorry.
Wow. God. Contain your excitement.
All right, let's move on to Doom Patrol Volume 1, number 95. Now, this is another 12-cent Doom Patrol issue, and it's done by the same people who did the last one.
So, excellent team.
Drake, Primiani, Bob Brown cover. Yeah. And what's exciting about this one, Mike?
It has Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man in it.
Yeah.
Yes, and we actually discussed this issue briefly back in Episode 3, also in January.
Yeah.
It's like time warping back to January almost.
It is, yeah.
Not quite. But
back
when
we were young. Yeah. Yeah, the gist of this one is the chief has been working on cures for the Doom Patrol because he does feel a bit of guilt, supposedly, about their conditions.
Which, I find that a bit weird, seeing he was so busy praising them for their uniqueness and their weird powers, and then he's like, I'll cure you guys instead.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's also weird that he has a cure for all of them at once, suddenly. Not just one of them at a time. You know?
Where's he been hiding those and that action chair all this time?
Yeah, he's up to stuff. That's the chief.
He's sneaky.
Yeah. So he can't really fix Cliff, because Cliff is a brain in a robot body.
Man who is a robot.
Man who is a robot. Robot man. But he's got a cure for Rita and Larry. So he's got like scientific domes. It's a bit like Cronenberg's The Fly. I would trust him. And as everyone goes in, they're all having doubts about do they want to lose their powers. You know, that means the end of the Doom Patrol. And everyone's thinking these things. Cliff is the one who does something about it. And he sits up and smashes the machines so that the cure doesn't take an effect.
Yep.
And then suddenly the Doom Patrol has to go into action. Of course, a giant vine is Galloping Ivy, it's called, is destroying buildings. So they run off to solve that. But Robot Man's, his body is stuffed from the prison break at the start where he jumped into a car and got smashed. But Chief wants in on the action, and he's built himself a robot body with a robot beard face.
Another conveniently timed discovery.
Yes, so he's got himself this robot armor that he wears that makes him look a bit like Robot Man with the cheese face. But it enables him to walk, and he demonstrates how strong it is by running a flamethrower over his face, as you do.
Yep.
So they all go off to fight this galloping ivy. The trouble is, as soon as they start to use their powers, Larry can suddenly grow really large, and Rita shoots out negative energy. So it's the old switcheroo. Power switcheroo. And it creates havoc. And as they get closer to the plant and try and stop it, it turns into an octopus. What the hell's going on?
It might be Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man.
Yeah. And then he turns into a lead net. It's crazy. And then he turns into a flock of birds. And then he turns into silver birds and forms a giant light bulb with electric eels. and then a giant caveman.
Yeah, because that's the icing on the cake. He's doing all this bizarre stuff, completely unexpected. And then he ends up being a Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
And then he turns into acid and circles them. And then he turns into a grizzly bear, and they zap him with a paralyzer ray that Rita went and fetched in her negative form. So, problem solved. I was a little disappointed with AVM that he didn't turn into the person who talks at all.
Yeah. Didn't turn into Lars again. And as you mentioned before, he only turns into one of something. Unlike on the cover artwork where he's got, you know, different quarters of his body are all different things. Whereas in the actual story, he's, you know, a Neanderthal, a giant bear, you know.
Yeah. Now, the cover is actually the coolest part of this.
Whoop. That signals a timely moment for more of those Doom facts from Reggie.
Doom facts.
Yes, Doom facts. Drake got his first break into comics via childhood friend Bob Kane. Yes, Bob Kane of Batman fame. He had Drake write a Batman story, and then he got steady work throughout the 50s writing for the mystery and horror books, as well as Challenges of the Unknown and various backups.
So what do you think of number 95 there, Mike?
As with most of the issues from the 60s, it's fun. It's a bit weird. It's probably not one of the stronger ones.
Yeah, I mean, the chief fixes everyone at the end, so it's the status quo is back.
Yeah, and AVM Man, again, still just being, you know, changing into one form instead of, you know, having arm made of diamonds and legs of an octopus and half of his face being an alligator.
I do like the when he gets knocked out at the end and he just got this very stunned, surprised-looking bear lying on the ground. It's quite fun.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
Fans of animals probably shouldn't look at that. I mean, it's not gross or anything, but yeah, the bear looks really stunned. Like, oh, derp.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so good issues there.
Yeah.
And really great Premiani art.
Yes. Definitely. I will I think we'll post up some of the best shots from both these issues, because there's some really cool stuff in there. So everyone can see the chief in his robot body with his robo beard.
Yeah.
And marvel at it.
Anyway, I'm gonna hit you with the last two of Reggie's mighty Doom facts. In 1962, Drake wrote a 6-page letter to the heads of national publications explaining that Marvel was going to be kicking their asses in short order if they didn't start writing better comic book stories. They ignored him to their peril. Marvel really took off in the 60s, and DC became pretty daggy. Daggy? Can we use that word?
We can. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Cool. And Drake also spent much of the 60s championing freelancers' rights, trying to get them health insurance at the corporate rate, among other things. Arnold Drake was one of the only freelancers at the time to get health insurance at the corporate rate for some reason.
Nice. No, that was cool. I did not know, well, I didn't know any of those things about Drake, to be honest, but that one especially was really cool.
Yeah, thanks, Reggie.
Yes, thanks, Reggie.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the mailbag O'Doom. This week on the show, we were asking everybody if they could name a comic creator you feel is deserving of greater recognition. And we heard from a few people, not too many, which is good, because it's a lot of work putting these together sometimes. We heard from, his name was Brian, who's at Pandas and Art, and he said, I can't understand why PJ Bond hasn't been asked to by publishers to draw every comic book ever. That's Philip Bond, for those of you who don't know. Are you familiar with the work of Phil Bond?
I will admit I am not.
Okay, well, let me hit you. He did Kill Your Boyfriend by Grant Morrison, a famous Grant Morrison book, which is very good. He did a Venomorama, which is another Grant Morrison one, which is great fun.
I'm aware of his stuff, yes. I don't think I've read any, but I remember those titles now, yes.
Well, hold on to your hat, Mike, because he did Doom Patrol Volume 2, number 52.
Well, knock my hat off my head, because I'll have to go and look at that one again now.
Yeah.
We also heard from Doug Zawisa, who said, seriously, Craig Rousseau has some serious chops and a nice range. He should be doing more comics.
Who's Craig Rousseau? I'm going to do a live Google while we talk.
Okay.
Live Google, Craig Rousseau, Marvel Avengers, X-Men First Class.
Ooh.
Oh, let's see, images, image search. I'm sure, lots of pictures of Supergirl. Oh, he's got a good style.
Okay.
Did he do the Metal Men series?
Maybe he did. Everyone go look up Craig Rousseau.
Yeah.
When you're listening to this.
just like we did.
Yes.
A bit of Batman stuff. All right, cool. Yeah, he looks great. He's got a really cartoony style. I hate when I talk hard. I sound so ignorant. He does the drawings that look like things. We heard from Ange, Dr. Ange70, who gave writer Sterling Gates and artist Amy Reeder. I'm a big Sterling Gates fan. He did a really good Supergirl run. He's done a little bit of extra stuff on the Green Lantern title here and there.
Cool.
So, yeah, good talent. And Amy Reeder was the Batwoman artist who wasn't J.H. Williams. You know how they're alternating art?
Right. Okay.
So very good. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We heard from Moby One, who is at Shmoby One on Twitter, and he said, Irv Novik, rest his soul.
Yeah, Novik was a long-serving artist with DC who sort of bounced between DC and the advertising world, a bit like Mad Men. There you go.
Okay.
But he was the Flash artist who followed Carmine Infantino, which was big shoes to fill, but apparently he had a good Flash look. And yeah, I've had a look at his art, and it is very good. And he was one of those people that bastard Roy Lichtenstein ripped off.
Right.
With the art panels that were sold for millions. Yeah, so he did one of those.
Right.
We heard from Carl D. Smith, Carl Smith, right? And he said, easiest question ever, J.P. Fosgate needs way more acclaim. And I looked up J.P. Fosgate for that, and another really good artist with a really fun-looking style for exaggerated people and animals and things. So
cool. We heard from Rich T. Wee Link Vim. on Twitter, and they said, without a doubt, at Royal Boiler is deserving of way more recognition. King City, multiple warheads, Prophet, all awesome stuff. Royal Boiler on Twitter is actually Brandon Graham, and yeah, agreed. I've only read his Prophet stuff, or the first trade of Prophet. I've got the second one sitting there in my to-read pile, but yeah, really good stuff. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I've read a bit of Prophet. It's good.
He's
good at Okay, we heard from Bobgar Ornelas, who's at Slurmo. It's a new person for us, isn't it?
Hi, Bobgar.
Yeah. Hey, Bobgar. He said, only one besides Premiani? There's dozens, but this precise moment I'm going with Henry Flint, who did a lot of 2000 AD work. I remember Henry Flint did. He was probably on the Omega Men the last time they had a miniseries.
Okay.
Remember that?
Timely, yes. Well, yeah. I'm aware of it. Didn't read it, but, you know.
I read it. It's good.
Cool. We also heard from Aaron Long at Juice005, and he said, Matt Roberts. He wrote Watchmen, for crying out loud, and nobody says anything about him these days.
That's a callback to a joke from Didn't Read It days.
Yeah, that's an old... yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Good work, Matt Roberts. Good work.
Yeah.
What about you, Paul? Who do you think could do with some more recognition?
I think there's a writer called D. Curtis Johnson who wrote the Chase series in the early 2000s.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and he sort of left comics kind of. And I think it was a great loss because that Chase series was one of the best things DC did in that era.
Cool.
And he had a great voice. He did. He got to play with some of the DC toys like the Suicide Squad in that series, and he did a great job on all of them. And good Batman and good Green Lantern. Yeah, great writer. Wish he was still working around. He's doing stuff. I'm sure he's productively employed in his own way, but yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, miss that stuff. What about you?
I will say, although he's kind of well-known-ish, I guess, but I'd like to see him get more stuff out there. Matteo Scalera, who does the art on Black Science also did the miniseries Dead Body Road with Justin Jordan. I just love his stuff. Yeah. I want more people to read it, see it. I want him to do more stuff. You know, so get out there, Matteo. Come on. But yeah, I really love his kind of, yeah, exaggerated and kind of scratchy style. Something about it just I find really appealing and really energetic in all the work he does. So I'd love to see him kind of maybe do a more mainstream book almost and get his name sort of out there in the lights a bit more. But yeah, love his stuff. Yeah,
I'm sure he's keeping busy with Black Science though.
Probably. Yeah, probably. It's a lot going on there.
All right. And lastly, in the mailbag segment, we got an email from Dr. Ranch.
Ooh.
Ooh. And he said, great episode. And so he's talking about the last episode, which was the Dave Hardman episode, which is, I think, one of our best.
They're all our best. They're all our best, Paul.
I think it was better than this one.
Anyway. Did Dr. Ange say?
Great episode, and so fun to hear another comics pro profess their love for the team. I had bought the first two issues of Hardman's Invisible Republic on Free Comic Book Day on the recommendation of Landry Walker and was stunned by the read. Such a good, intelligent book, instant immersion into the world, expecting the reader to work a bit to catch up and comprehend. As for the Patrol, I agree that the key feel to the book has to be weird. When the Patrol isn't weird, they're just another superhero team, and that just doesn't suit the characters. I think this was the biggest problem with the Kupperberg issues. Those were pretty standard superhero stories, and as a result, didn't feel as doomish as they should. I also think this is why the Giffen Clark series did work. It embraced the weirdness of all the prior incarnations and just ran with it. Yeah. And that is why I think the Byrne stuff failed.
Yeah.
Thanks again for the great show, Ange. Thanks, Ange. We love your emails.
Thanks, Ange.
Yeah.
You are the man. Okay, so that's pretty much it for our show this week. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can also reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. What's coming up on our next episode, Paul?
It looks like we're going to do a bit of Morrison Doom Patrol. So we'll be looking at the stories featuring the Cult of the Unwritten book, the debut of Willoughby Kipling, anagrams, and lots more fun.
Excellent. Excellent. Cool. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you next time.
Thanks very much. Much of a Doom Clock segment this week, huh?
Nah, bugger all. Sweet FA.